mind symptoms, repetitive images, an anxiety-provoking picture that you can't get out of your mind. This intrudes during your day, whether you're talking with someone, driving, or whatever. Circular thought. A thought like a broken record keeps going around and around in your mind. I gotta do blank. I gotta check blank. I gotta clean blank. Continuous and systematic action. You actually have to act on that thought repeatedly. You do blank. Check the blank. Clean the blank over and over and over again. Like weeds in a garden, these images, thoughts, or actions take over your mind, consuming your day, and making it harder for you to have normal relationships, productive work, or peace of mind. Your mind is focused on details, rules, lists, order, and organization, so much that people often note you miss the point of a project. You are perfectionistic to a fault, compelled to erase every flaw from a task. However, sometimes it makes it hard for you to tolerate a lack of perfectionism in others. It's easier for you to bear down on productivity at work. However, sometimes that tends to displace time in your schedule for friendship and leisure activities. Body symptoms. In addition to the symptoms in the previous section, you may have these. Your muscles are extremely tight. You have a forward bent posture. You have digestive allergies, IBS, and/or constipation. If this sounds like you, don't worry. With your obsessiveness and compulsivity and drive to get it right, you can fix your obsessive, compulsive, anxious tendency if you put your mind to it. Keep listening to the following case. Remember, you're in the virtual All Is Well clinic. We have the technology. We can help you. Beth and Charles, Obsessions and Compulsions. Beth, 43, called the All Is Well clinic because she was concerned about her husband, Charles, 43. She thought he might be a control fanatic. The intuitive reading. When I first read Charles, it felt like he was an emperor. Emperors rule the kingdom. Their way of loving people is to make decisions for them, handle everything for them. That may feel great if you want everything taken care of. However, after a while, you may end up feeling that your freedom is being impinged just a little bit. And I sensed that when people around Charles tried to strike out in independence, he got annoyed. Unless you did things his way, he'd get annoyed. Everything at home had to be his way. People had to fit into his order. Otherwise, he got nervous and then angry. I could sense that Charles didn't like change. The body. Looking at Charles' body, it felt like all the muscles were tight as a rock. Every muscle fixed in position. Braced at attention, like a marine at inspection. Other than minor digestion and skin problems, I didn't think he'd even admit to any physical symptoms. The facts. Beth said that, yes, indeed it was in fact true that Charles had trouble with change. He had obsessiveness. He had compulsiveness. Everyone called him a control fanatic. At home, their kitchen drawers, their closets, even their garage was a masterpiece of perfect organization, order, and control. And if anyone tried to move anything, there was a price to pay. The same was true at Charles' work. When someone at home or at work tried to suggest a change of any kind, from a renovation project to a new piece of furniture to a new way of thinking, Charles would snap unless people submitted to his way of doing things. Beth wanted to know if supplements, medicines, or other remedies would help with his symptoms. The solution. Every family, every company, everyone needs someone who's obsessive and compulsive to help everybody stay in line and help the system run well. However, if you are that person who is very organized, very perfectionistic, but tends to be obsessive and compulsive and, at the extreme, can't get those repetitive images and thoughts out of your mind, your compulsion is going to take over your life. When you get nervous, do you try to order your environment? When you're insecure and the world around you is changing, do you try to clean your desktop, clean out your purse, or make lists and schedules? If a lot of order and perfection helps reduce your anxiety, this can make you great as an accountant or some other kind of detail-oriented professional. However, if your perfectionism and order spill over onto the people around you, then you'll begin to have problems. People might think of you as a control fanatic. Then you're going to feel misunderstood and underappreciated. They might think of you as rigid, overly organized, inflexible, when really all you're trying to do is help. I have a friend who's a fabulous secretary. She is the epitome of efficiency. However, she's a little nervous. Everything in her life looks like it's calibrated with a protractor. And it'd be a little bit of an imp when she went to the ladies' room once. I sneaked into her office and I changed just a degree, just a millimeter, the things on her desk. And then when she came back from the bathroom, I watched as she glanced at her desktop and put everything millimeter by millimeter back in its place. Because otherwise, it was just too anxiety-provoking for her. It was clear that the woman used her environmental control as Valium. Do you order your environment as if it were Xanax? And if you can't control your schedule and if there are out-of-control events around you, too much change, do you get panic-stricken? If this is you, and I might add a little bit of me too, then your anxiety may come out in the form of obsessions and compulsions. If you don't do these perfectionistic things in your environment, you may be haunted by images and thoughts of what will happen if you don't. You're going to be loved for your neatness. People will call you and ask you if you have Virgo somewhere in your chart. They will want you to make plans for the trip or help them pack. However, there is a chance you might drive yourself and others just a little bit crazy, and it might take you too long at times to finish up your projects at work because, like weeds in the garden, obsessions and compulsions in your frontal lobe can take over your emotions, the space in your house, and the space in your life. Not to mention the fact that you need to keep your life under tight control can become memorialized in tight control in the muscles in your body. You might find yourself having lower back pain, shoulder pain, neck pain, headaches, and the like. The treatments. People with this form of anxiety often don't want to take medicines, supplements, or herbs. Their symptoms of obsessiveness and compulsivity make it difficult for them to take pills into their body. Perhaps it's the excessive norepinephrine that makes them jittery. Perhaps it's the thought that they can control the problem on their own without taking anything, or the uncertainty of not knowing which of the long lists of side effects they see on the internet could happen to them. If this is you, you may want to try the solutions for anxiety, medicines, supplements, herbs that we saw in the previous section, but start with one half or one quarter of the dose. Before you take the medicine, supplement, herb, look into the mirror and say to yourself, this is such a low dose, it will have no effect, and it will have no side effect. By conditioning your brain and body in this way, you are talking to your mind centers distributed in every tissue in your body, telling them you can be safe accepting help from something outside of you. You may also want to have a coach or therapist help you with dialectic behavioral therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, or mindfulness to help you learn how to reorganize the emotional and thought patterns in your brain and body. In addition, try anti-anxiety supplements, 5-HTP, rhodiola, or ashwagandha, or medicines such as Zoloft, Paxil, or others if they don't cause you side effects. Use yoga or massage to relax those stiff, tight, board-like muscles. Yamuna, body rolling, or other modalities that help bring awareness to your muscles might help loosen the muscles creating tension in the tendons and the fascia. The Alexander technique may help you bring consciousness to your posture, which can tend to buckle forward with muscle tension. There are other things you can try as well. Ask your nearby holistic healthcare practitioner for essential oils that might be helpful for calming and relaxing and soothing you. The affirmations. Now for the affirmations that will help create more flexibility in your brain and reduce anxiety, obsessions, and compulsions. The affirmation Louise offers for this situation is, relationships are safe for me. All my relationships are loving. It is safe for me to be open and honest in a relationship, and I allow others to be open and honest with me. It is safe for me to love. It is safe for me to take care of myself in a relationship. It is safe for me to be myself with others. It is safe for me to learn and grow. I am willing to change. I am willing to become more of who I am. It is safe for me to be all that I can be. I threaten no one when I am myself, and all of my relationships support me in my growth. I am safe with my friends. I am safe with my acquaintances. I am safe with the public. I am even safe with my so-called enemies. I now attract only loving people into my life. I am safe at every age. Relying on your cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectic behavioral therapy, affirmations, and any supplements and medicines you're taking, you start to rewire the thought patterns in your frontal lobe and your fear pathways. You will learn to sail forward with the true rhythm of life, just a little bit less in control. Part 3. Trauma and mind-body anxiety. Have you experienced an event or events in your life that were so traumatic they were outside the realm of normal experience? Events such as rape, incest, abuse, witnessing a murder, or the loss of your body's physical integrity? If so, trauma may have shaped your mind and your body toward anxiety, just as you heard in Chapter 1 that it can shape your mind and body toward depression. In addition to the symptoms we outlined in the previous two sections, listen to this list and check off the items that apply to your life right now. Mind symptoms. You experienced painful emotional or physical trauma in your family growing up. You suffered emotional or physical trauma in one or more of your relationships. There has been an event in your life in which you've been threatened with such serious physical or emotional harm that it would be out of the range of what we consider normal life experience. Some examples might be living through war, witnessing an accident with loss of life or limb, experiencing rape or incest, or seeing your children suffer abuse. Whatever the trauma you've experienced, you tend to have repeat performances of this painful pattern in one relationship after another, one job after another, and so on. The painful pattern seems to replay over and over in your life like the movie Groundhog Day. You have thought patterns of terror, fright, panic, and edginess. You have a feeling that you may be harmed or hurt, or that someone might reject or criticize you. You believe you won't get the help you need. You feel you're incompetent to change the situation. You feel like you're going crazy. Body symptoms. In addition to the symptoms in the previous section, you may have these: trembling and shaking, hot flashes and cold chills, numbness and tingling, nausea or a sick feeling in your stomach, pressure in your chest, a pounding heart, cold sweats, shortness of breath, a lump in your throat, dizziness and vertigo, feeling like you're out of your body, feeling like you're dying. In every chapter in this book, you'll find that trauma can rewire the brain in some area of function. But don't worry, we have solutions in the All Is Well clinic. If this describes you, listen on. As a client in this virtual clinic, you will have a whole host of solutions you can use with your healthcare team to create physical relief and emotional serenity. Dolly, anxiety after a traumatic experience. Dolly, 28, came to me because her family was concerned for her after a traumatic childhood. The intuitive reading. I saw Dolly as if she were in a house and someone was walking in and out, slamming the door. The individual in the house, who seemed to be creating terror, seemed to have violent mood swings, so potent they would affect people nearby, in the same room, or even on other floors in the house. It felt like Dolly's world was threatened, and the horror of being around this person reverberated in her body. After meeting that family, I saw that Dolly's life seemed unstable in so many realms. Did she have a hard time making friends outside of her family? I had a hard time seeing a partner or other relationships. It didn't seem like she could last in a job or make enough money to support herself. The body. Her head felt shaky. Her body felt shaky. Everything about Dolly's mind and body felt nervous. Was there dizziness and vertigo in her head? I sensed a lump in her throat. It seemed that she was constantly out of breath and her heart skipped a beat in a way that was terrifying. I could see that her digestive tract tended to look like it had butterflies in it, giving her that nauseous feeling. All the muscles in her body seemed tight, making her feel exhausted. I could see Dolly up all hours of the night trying to get to sleep. The facts. It turned out that Dolly had seen her father beat her mother on multiple occasions. His explosive temper drove away everyone except for, of course, Dolly. Dolly still lived with her father because she couldn't manage to find Mr. Right, nor could she make any job last. Her problems with focus and attention made it hard for her to finish school, and she was soon diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. Dolly told me that doctors gave her antidepressants for irritability, and then they said she had bipolar disorder, the idea of which she thought was ridiculous. Dolly began to medicate away the memories of her father's violence with alcohol and marijuana. All she wanted was to have the episodes of panic go away. She wanted the chest pounding, the choking, the trembling, the nausea, all to just leave so she could start to have a happy life. The solution. Many of us have events in our life that are traumatic. A parent dies when we're in middle age. One of our children gets a minor illness and we're terrified that they may not survive. A child may be diagnosed with a learning disability, or we may have a fender bender on the highway. All of us have the resilience in our brains and our bodies to bounce back. However, when we experience an event that is over the top in magnitude, such as an up-close personal experience of war, watching a loved one die, being a victim of rape or abuse, and so on, the horrific memories get laid down in our brains and bodies. Psychiatry names this post-traumatic stress disorder PTSD. The most recent studies with brain scans indicate that in PTSD sufferers, the fear network is not working properly. Whether it's revealed by PET scans or magnetic spectroscopy, we know that the elements of the network produce aberrant amounts of serotonin, GABA, or other neurotransmitters. If you, like the person in this case, have had serious trauma in your life, you may suffer from anxiety as well as depression and from its effects in your brain and body. First, understand that part of all life is distress. From the moment we're born, we cry. It's painful. Daily, all of us have one event or another that causes distress. Some amount of stress, pain, is necessary for us to grow and develop. Some even believe that crisis is necessary to challenge us and force us forward to accomplish greater and greater feats. Whether it's taking our first steps, or the anxiety we face on the first day of kindergarten, or the first day of college, all of us have to face normal amounts of fear and other feelings so we can recruit other brain regions to adjust our thoughts and move on to the next life mission. However, if we've been threatened or someone close to us has been threatened with bodily harm or sexual violence, this can be considered PTSD if four basic symptoms continue longer than a month. 1, you keep having reverberating memories of the event in the form of dreams, images, or body reactions. 2, you go out of your way to avoid situations that remind you of the event. This might be avoiding a highway or highways around it after you've had a car accident, or avoiding the sounds of airports if you've seen a helicopter crash, and so on. You avoid situations where you hear, see, or sense reminders of the trauma. 3, you have changes in how your thoughts work, your moods function, and your body functions after the event. Your memory is like a fog. You can't remember events. You may feel like you're out of your body. You dissociate. And as a result, you may have a distorted memory of events. You may either blame yourself or blame the world. You may start to withdraw from activities. You may feel numb or detached from loved ones. And somehow, that overall dulling in your brain makes it hard for you to experience love, joy, and satisfaction. 4, last but not least, your body remains keyed up after the trauma with norepinephrine, that adrenal gland stress hormone, which causes you to be jumpy, reactive, and hypervigilant. Your muscles will tighten, and you'll get exhausted. This also makes it hard for you to focus, pay attention, and, yes, fall asleep. Your jumpiness and moodiness may make you more likely to have angry outbursts, causing problems with your relationships, your job, or your functioning as a whole. The symptoms of panic with PTSD are not the most paralyzing consequence. What is the most paralyzing consequence is you restrict your life. You start to avoid things that remind you of the trauma. The circle of avoidance gets greater and greater and greater and greater. Those highways you started to avoid after the accident start to become back roads as well, until you stop driving completely. Hearing traffic noises may bother you, at which time you start closing the windows in your house and just don't want to listen to any kind of car at all. You may stay home more and more, and when people start to tell you, hey, listen, you're getting more and more restricted in your life, you'll say, well, I could do more, but I'd rather not. You start to think, what would happen if? Well, I could go in a car, but what if an accident happens? A minority of people, 5%, actually end up unable to leave their homes. A homebound situation called agoraphobia. The treatments. If you have suffered from a serious trauma in your life that affects your mind and body, go to Chapter 1 and listen to Section 3 in the All Is Well clinic there. Chances are, your trauma increases your chance toward depression, and many of the solutions in that section may apply to you. Those solutions can help you support your brain and body as you heal the past and create a healthier mind-body for greater happiness in the present and the future. And when it comes to suffering from panic after a trauma, it's important to look at all the medical conditions that can make your anxiety, nervousness, and twitchiness worse. Have a physician check out your thyroid, your blood sugar, your calcium, and your adrenal gland. Hyperthyroidism, Cushing's syndrome, excessive cortisol or adrenal gland exhaustion, and a parathyroid gland problem can all mimic or worsen panic attacks. Go to a cardiologist and have an EKG to check out your heart rhythm. If you have symptoms of dizziness, vertigo, and feeling out of your body, go to a neurologist to make sure you aren't also having a brainwave problem. Go to an ear, nose, and throat doctor to make sure your middle ear isn't also causing you some symptom. Notice I'm not saying that if you treat these physical health problems, your panic will completely go away. Traumatic experience may increase your chance toward having all of these disorders. So, it's important to treat both the physical problems and the emotional distress. While you're at it, make sure that your shortness of breath isn't made worse by allergies or asthma. Have a trusted coach, counselor, or nutritionist go over your diet to make sure that medicines, supplements, or foods aren't making your panic worse, especially caffeine and alcohol, not to mention cocaine and marijuana. You might say, marijuana? How could that possibly make my panic worse? Well, it may make you calm at first, but over time, it will make your brain foggier in terms of attention and memory. It's called borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. Using marijuana may calm your nerves, but mess up your attention. Using alcohol can help you fall asleep, but you'll end up feeling more depressed. It's important to work with a trusted practitioner to balance your psychopharmacology so that the things you're doing to self-medicate your panic aren't making your brain and body worse. Other solutions? Now that you have been medicinally and pharmacologically rewiring your body, you might as well do the same with your brain and your behavior. Cognitive behavioral therapy can help you start to identify the thought patterns in your brain, the what if and I could but I'd rather not thought patterns. Exposure therapy can help stop the pattern in which you avoid more and more things in the world. This is a procedure where you use imagery and with a tremendous amount of support, start to imagine past traumatic events and conceive present circumstances that remind you of them. With support, you'll learn to desensitize your brain and body. It's important at this stage of your treatment to tell yourself that you are a brave survivor for having come so far and that you want, paradoxically, to face new situations that might be scary and out of your comfort zone. Holding two thought patterns that are seemingly opposite concepts, i.e. paradox, is the key to healing trauma. For example, I love myself just the way I am is a phrase that can be coupled with its seeming opposite, I want to change. Often people who have a history of trauma and abuse have difficulty holding paradox and are prone to black and white thinking. So you might say, I'm a survivor. I've come this far. This is what I've learned to do to feel safe. However, if the way you've learned to feel safe is by limiting your life to only one or two friends, you'll feel less anxiety at first. But in the long run, you'll socially starve. Limiting happiness and freedom because you are panic-stricken means you are still shackled to your trauma. That's all right. You can love yourself where you are and want more. How do you do that? Dialectical behavioral therapy helps you train your brain to handle seemingly opposite thoughts and get rid of the black and white thinking that escalates panic and limits your life. Dialectical behavioral therapy for many is the treatment of choice for PTSD and panic disorder. This kind of cognitive behavioral therapy is based on Tibetan Buddhism and mindfulness. It helps you learn how to regulate panic, fear, sadness, anger, shame, and guilt. You may also want to consider hypnotherapy. EMDR stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing, and other therapies that help people alter their mind-body networks for trauma. Other mind-body medicines for panic. In addition to 5-HTP, passion flower, lemon balm, rhodiola, and ashwagandha, you may want to consider also going to a psychopharmacologist if your panic gets out of control for temporary medication support. But warning, try to avoid Xanax, Valium, Klonopin, and other benzodiazepines. Yes, they may help in the short term, but if you find that you're using them for a very long time to curb anxiety and panic, you may find out, as I've said, that you end up getting two problems instead of one. In addition to PTSD, you might find out you have an addiction, and then you'll end up having to go to rehab to get off the Xanax, Valium, or Klonopin. Not easy. Traditional Chinese medicine can be helpful to treat brain and body anxiety, especially after panic. Try these. If you tend to get hot, cold sweats, Sisyphe spinosi. If you tend to get shortness of breath and panic, Lumbricus. If your blood pressure tends to be too high or you get chest symptoms, Unkari. If you have problems falling asleep, Magnesium. If you have stomach distress and panic, Os Triconis and Conca Ostrea. If you're perimenopausal and you have symptoms of anxiety and panic from PTSD, there are a variety of other medicines. Cordialis Tuber treat nervousness, agitation, insomnia, and headache. Coptis Rhizome treats nervousness, anxiety, chest pressure, hot flashes, and memory issues. Then there's Magnolia Cortex, promotes relaxation, decreases anxiety, and helps with insomnia, as well as the stomach upset. The affirmations. When it comes to handling trauma, the first thing Louise does is have a person recreate it in themselves and in their world. To help a person handle trauma from the past, especially childhood, she helps them create a healthier inner child, one with memories of safety and security. Other therapies do the same. They call it reparenting yourself. Louise's affirmations for the inner child help you establish thought patterns in your brain for the child in you who saw the world as anxious and fearful. So, before we get to those exercises, is there really a way that could affect your brain? Is there really a way that healing the inner child with affirmations could really rewire the injured brain circuitry of a person who has PTSD? Quite possibly, yes. There is a lot of science to suggest that past trauma changes the way we perceive the world. When you have a trauma at a younger age, the memory warps your brain circuits. Affirmations help you change the wiring. So perhaps by doing these inner child exercises, we are implanting in our brain competing thoughts and memories that dilute or drown out traumatic ones. I don't think you can ever remove a traumatic memory. Many wonderful, brilliant, and great people's lives have been formed and directed by trauma. Nelson Mandela, for one, was imprisoned for 25 years, and to say the least, was subjected to catastrophic humiliation and physical and emotional suffering that later took its toll on his physical health. And his trauma gave birth to a form of wisdom that is a revolutionary force to create peace in our society. You don't want to remove all of your traumatic memory, do you? If you do, think again. Erasing traumatic memory may remove sources of wisdom that could inform your future avocation or calling. Once again, try a dialectic. I personally can certainly understand the desire to wipe out pain and suffering in one's past, and, notice I didn't say but, I choose instead to think of all the sundry painful and traumatic events in my life as, in fact, a credential. Many people think my best credentials are my BA from Brown University, my MD, or my PhD, and certification in psychiatry. That may be true, and you may also agree that I receive wisdom in some other critical ways. Scoliosis, and having a rod in my spine with a fusion from my neck all the way through. Epilepsy and narcolepsy, where I fall asleep, once falling asleep while running across a bridge, and getting hit by a truck and thrown 86 feet, fracturing my pelvis, ribs, and scapula, and probably sustaining a brain injury. Bilateral invasive breast cancer with a double mastectomy and reconstruction. During the last spinal fusion, there were many, I bled out on the table, taking 10 minutes to be resuscitated, and being in the ICU for 2.5 weeks. A foot-long clot in a vein in my left hip, 4 small bowel obstructions, dyslexia, and ADHD. Suffice it to say, it's been a bit of a ride. I've managed to survive, maybe even thrive, despite the fact I've had a lot of scars on my brain and body. And yes, maybe a vulnerability in my spirit, though I wouldn't want to admit it. I bring to you this credential. Now, join me in Louise's meditation. In the following exercise, Louise tries to help us rewire our brain's vision, hearing, and memory circuits by guiding us through an inner child meditation. She tries to recreate a safer and more loving world. Perhaps she's helping us rewire our amygdala and hippocampal circuits as we reparent ourselves. See your inner child. Notice how the little child looks and feels. Comfort your child. You might apologize to your little one for having neglected it for so long and only berated it and scolded it in the past. But now you can promise your inner child that from now on, you will always be there for it. You will never leave it alone, and whenever this child wants your comfort or advice or playtime with you, you will always be there. You acknowledge that this relationship with your inner child is one of the most important in your life. Tell your child how much you treasure it. Build its self-esteem and self-worth with praise. See your child relaxed, safe, peaceful, enjoying itself, laughing, happy, playing with friends, and running free. Enjoying everything it does, school, studying, being creative, sharing with others, touching a flower, hugging a tree, picking a piece of fruit, eating with delight, playing with a puppy or a kitten, or swinging a swing high above, laughing with joy, running up to you, giving you a big hug. See the two of you, healthy, living in a beautiful, safe place, having wonderful relationships, parents, friends, co-workers, being greeted with joy wherever you go, having a special kind of love with a special person. Now, visualize the teenager within you with love, being comforted as it moves through a bewildering time of puberty that marks the transition from childhood to adulthood, building its self-esteem and self-worth. Visualize the adult in you now and congratulate yourself for having come this far. You are always doing the best you could at any point in time and space. Build your own self-esteem and self-worth. The love and acceptance you have for yourself now will make it easy to move in the next level of self-love. You are very powerful. You have the power within you to help create the kind of world you want all of us to live in. Louise also offers affirmations for PTSD. I am harmless to others, and others are harmless to me. I feel safe with the young and with the old. I feel safe with those who are like me and those who are different from me. I feel safe with animals. I feel relaxed with animals. I live in harmony with all animals. The weather is my friend. I am in harmony with all life, the sun, the moon, the winds, and the rain, and the earth and the movement of the earth. I am at peace with the elements. I am always comfortable in any weather. My body adjusts to the outer temperature. I am at ease. I have also learned to be tranquil. In the midst of chaos, I can be tranquil. Tranquility is inner peace. I practice being peaceful when others are agitated. I do not have to buy into people's agitation. For me, peace of mind and loving myself is the most important state I can experience. By changing my thoughts, I now create peace in my world. Peace replaces fear. Terror is replaced by tranquility. Scariness becomes serenity. Uncertainty becomes confidence. Love replaces hate. Repression makes for freedom. I bless all people with love. I surround the planet with love. I know we are safe. All is well, and so it is. Part 4. Panic after a life-threatening illness. Serious illness is a reasonable cause of panic, and, as you realize in Chapter 6, serious illness in your body may elicit anxiety in your biochemistry, even if you are confident you'll survive and maintain your physical integrity. See if the following statements apply to you. Mind symptoms. You have or you have had an illness that has threatened your life or stopped you in your track. The health problem makes you feel alone and in the dark as to what your future may bring. You've been hurt by the treatment and or you're afraid of future treatments. You're afraid of what the doctors are going to tell you and you avoid practitioners because you don't want any more bad news. Body symptoms. Any of the physical symptoms of anxiety you heard about in the previous sections. If this applies to a loved one rather than you, the panic in essence is the same, because empathically, if a loved one has a life-threatening illness, you may carry the worry and terror for him or her. Here's just a brief list of life-threatening illnesses that may affect you or a loved one. A diagnosis of an autoimmune illness that can progress to organ failure. Life-threatening allergies that prevent you from being in public. infertility, the loss of reproductive function, a sexually transmitted disease whose shame is so horrifying that it prevents you from wanting to engage in intimate relationships, severe reflux that can progress to a variety of life-threatening stomach problems, diarrhea, constipation, or other digestive problems that prevent you from being around people, obesity with weight in excess of 100 pounds over your normal weight, heart attack, blocked coronary arteries, repeated strokes, cancers of any kind, progressive memory loss, Parkinson's disease, dementias. If this is the situation you're in, or a loved one is in, and you're having trouble managing your anxiety and terror to the point it's making it hard for you to handle your life in the face of a complicated health problem, read on. And just a hint, your anxiety is not all in your head. Evan, I'm afraid I'm going to die. Evan called my medical intuitive service, panicking, wanting a reading right away. The intuitive reading. When I looked at Evan emotionally, all I could see was fear and dread, fear and dread. I had a hard time seeing his life. I knew that he was looking at his mortality, which was rare for him. I saw that he was a person who was very driven, someone who was fiercely competitive in nature, very good in a dog-eat-dog world, but not as good as seeing the spiritual and emotional side of life. The body. I sensed that Evan had trouble with focus and attention, but that could be his intense anxiety. My attention was drawn directly to his lungs, which seemed to be dark. Was this because he lived in a smoky place? Did he used to smoke? The rest of his body didn't seem to be an issue. The facts. Evan said, "I'm afraid I'm going to die." Evan told me he had been diagnosed with a shadow in his lung after years of smoking. A biopsy revealed he had lung cancer. He was getting ready to see an oncologist. Evan was a very successful businessman who had bought and sold real estate for years. He said he had spent all of his life working, 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 and really never got to know his children or his partner. Now that he was alone and divorced and his children had grown up, he was afraid that he might die alone. His entire life, he'd always felt like he was in control. In control of the business deal, able to maintain a stoic face in the midst of fierce competition, but now, faced with a life-threatening illness and potential mortality, he felt terrified of losing control and very alone. Existential fear. Are you stopped in your tracks by panic in the face of a life-threatening illness? At some time in all of our lives, we're going to have the fear of bodily harm, the fear of our mortality, the fear of a loved one's death, the fear of our own death. All of us come to this planet. We are born, but then one day, of course, we have to leave the planet. We have to die. Evan's story reminds me of that David Bowie song, "The Man Who Sold the World." I had to play this song 9 times before I had any idea what it meant. The story is about someone who never loses control. It's about a man who creates an identity he shows to the world. But that identity is one-dimensional because it's only about I, what he does for work, what he does when he comes home. It's never about we. It's not two-dimensional, or it's not about we, him, in spirit. So, in fact, he sold out. He sold his identity to be a lawyer, to be wealthy, rather than to be in a relationship with somebody else or with spirit. The man who sold the world. Are you facing fear of an illness? That proverbial crossroads in life? You may be asking yourself, is this all there is? How much more time do I have left? What do I want to do with it? The solution. Fear of death is not a psychiatric problem. However, if you are suffering from a life-threatening illness, your brain-body chemistry may be disrupted to such a degree that you may have problems with anxiety, not to mention brain fog. Ironically, in the midst of the crisis in your health, it may be hard to know where panic and terror end and health problems begin. You may not even know you have brain fog that is making it hard for you to emotionally and mentally and spiritually see your way through this developmental stage in your life, one all of us sooner or later have to face. Don't go it alone. Have a health team where you are the CEO. Mind you, you will call the shots and they will be advisors. Have one of the physicians or practitioners evaluate you for delirium or brain fog. If that's you, go to the previous case in this chapter and follow the suggestions in that section. Make sure you get continuous support so people can help you focus and keep track of details as you progress through your healing journey. Depression and anxiety. As you make adjustments to family, relationships, finances, and career, it's normal to get depressed and anxious. But anxiety and depression can be a sign that your body's chemistry is out of balance. See Chapter 1. Have a counselor you feel comfortable with support you through the grief, panic that's inevitable during this journey. Resist the need to over-medicate with supplements, herbs, and medicines during this time, as those substances may overcloud your mind. However, consider taking some small amount of the anxiety solutions in the first case of this chapter. Get social support. A friend or buddy can help reduce anxiety and improve longevity. The absence of close friends affects our longevity as much as alcohol, obesity, or cigarette smoking. This is when a close friend holding your hand will do as much for your anxiety as extending your life. Get a spiritual advisor. When the friends have left and you're home or in a room alone, you may feel particular terror and anxiety. No matter who or what you believe in, a health crisis challenges anybody's faith. Even the most devoutly spiritual individuals may lose their faith or at least question it during a health crisis. Alternately, someone who has previously had no faith at all, a devout atheist, you might say, may start to question whether there's more. This may be the moment in which you need an advisor to bat back and forth these ideas. Yes, it's great to bat them around in a journal alone, but the healing power of sitting with another person may help clear your way toward finding some peace in what may feel at times like an abyss. Christian mystics called life crisis, such as a life-threatening illness, the dark night of the soul. Find illumination and solace, be it from a spiritual advisor or a pastor or simply a friend. Did I cause my illness? In medical intuition, a life-threatening illness has to do with getting in touch with your purpose in life, why you are here, but also getting in touch with your higher power, God, or whatever you call it. The very fact of fearing death makes a person feel powerless. In the 12-step tradition, whether it's dealing with alcoholism or any other addiction, the first step is realizing your life is unmanageable, out of control, and you understand there is a power greater than you. Some people have difficulty understanding this concept, so they try to find how or why they caused their problem. It's not either or. If it's difficult for you, understand that we co-create our life in partnership with a greater source, a higher power. You have some influence on your life, but a higher power, the whole universe, also adds its influence, and together you create in partnership. Would you agree that you don't have an equal vote with the whole universe? I don't know. I don't have all the answers because I'm not dead yet. I'm still trying to find them as I grow and gain more wisdom through these learning experiences in life. If you too are facing a life-threatening illness, understand that none of us have all the answers. Affirmations help calm us just a little bit, give us solace as we face a life-threatening illness and handle a potential transition in our life. Affirmations do not prevent us from dying from a life-threatening illness. Prayer does not prevent us from dying. Affirmations like prayer help us develop our full mind-body potential during life-threatening illness, which is, in a way, a developmental stage of our life. The affirmations. Louise offers these affirmations for a life-threatening illness. I feel safe in my body. I am healthy and safe and secure. Old beliefs and disease and pain and suffering are now released. I now choose to be healthy, and I now radiate vibrant health. I take loving care of my body, and my body loves me. Food is my friend. Exercise is my friend. I am safe when exercising. I enjoy the feeling of exercise. My body loves to be stretched, and I choose exercise that is a joy. It is safe for me to be young. It is safe for me to be old. I look forward to living a long and healthy life. Every age holds its own joys and treasures. I will enjoy my life to its last minute and beyond. And when I leave this world, I know I will be safe in my next new adventure. When it is time to make my transition, I will pass from this world in peace and in harmony at that time that is perfect for me. Death is a natural experience, and I am safe. Life gives me all of my experiences at the perfect time. I am in harmony with this process called life. And even though sometimes I do not understand why certain things happen, I am willing to see beyond it and know that life is always unfolding at my highest good. I no longer choose to scare myself with my own thoughts. I love myself too much to frighten myself ever again. I see myself standing in a very safe place, releasing burdens and pain and fear. Old negative addictions and patterns, seeing them falling away from me, and then seeing myself stand there with my arms wide open, saying, I am open and receptive to, and declaring for myself what it is I want, not what I don't want, but what I do want, and know that it is possible. I see myself whole and healthy, at peace. I see myself filled with love. I see a connection with other people and feel the love that is in this world, and I know that I'm part of it, and the love that is in this world can move from heart to heart, and as my love goes around this world, it comes back to me multiplied in an incredible circle of love. I see myself in the center of this circle, surrounded by love, safe, at peace, in harmony with all of life. I have the ability to love my life and to love myself, and so it is. Chapter 3, Addiction. Do any of these behaviors sound familiar to you? Is there anything on this list that you focus on to the exclusion of what could make you happy in your life, whether it's family, friends, or productive career? Collecting shoes, clothes, books, technology, yet another new device? Sports activities like hiking or running? Maybe even self-inflicted injuries? Texting, social media, checking emails, shopping, sex, pornography, dieting, bulimia, alcohol, illicit drugs, coffee and colas, carbohydrates, chocolate, smoking, working, betting, gambling, rescuing people, needing to be needed, not wanting to be alone, gossiping, talking on the phone, lying, stealing, shoplifting, speeding, smartphone apps, video games, internet surfing, risky behavior, perpetual spiritual practices that facilitate your avoiding or escaping life on earth. Now, when it comes to the thing on this list that you fear you might have a problem with, ask yourself the following questions. Have you ever felt the need to cut down on doing it? Have people annoyed you by criticizing you for it? Have you ever felt guilty about it? When you wake up in the morning, is it the first thing you think about when you open your eyes? You just gave yourself the CAGE questionnaire. CAGE is usually used to identify alcohol addiction. However, though the questionnaire is not valid for diagnosing other addictions, modified versions of it have been used to identify other addictions in one form or another. If you say yes to two or more of those questions, it indicates you may have a problem. And the most important question in the CAGE questionnaire is number 4, the eye-opener. Because if what's consuming you is the first thing you think about when you open your eyes in the morning, hello? If one of these behaviors has hijacked your life and taken over your time, money, resources, so that it's hard for you to have a full life with family, friends, money, work, and so on, chances are addiction to some degree has affected you. If you have trouble breaking the cycle of eating, drinking, or doing any of the things I've just listed, then join the club. Is there any one of us who doesn't have an addiction or two? Ways of looking at addiction. Addictions are a key part of our intuitive guidance system, letting us know we are covering up